This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Now, there's a couple of extra episodes of the podcast this week. We've got Simon Pegg of Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz fame, who stars in How to Lose Friends and Alienate People. And there's a chat with Kevin Spacey, who stars in the new film Recount, which chronicles the weeks after the 2000 US presidential election and the subsequent recounts in Florida. You'll find both of these interviews as part of our movie podcast
on DAB digital radio, digital TV, downloads and online.
This is 5Live.
Mark's about to do the top 10. I was going to invite you to join in the top 10 instant reviews, but you might find it politically difficult.
Well, I haven't seen the movie, so...
That's generally what people say. Obviously, they're lying.
Listen, I've actually seen none of these.
Just make it up.
Oh, you mean you want me to give the, review these films?
Yeah. We go down and I pithily review them and then you pithily disagree with them.
We'll chance around. We'll see where we go. Okay. And Irene says, damn, I've just realised I'm missing Recount on More 4 tonight because I'm going to be at the Good Doctor's band's gig at the Borderline in London.
Oh, fantastic. Is that the Borderline in London that the Dodge Brothers are playing at?
The Good Doctor here is in a skiffle band called the Dodge Brothers.
Yeah. Skiffle. Do you know what skiffle is?
No.
You know American jug band music?
Sure.
Yeah, well, that's British skiffle is the British, what happened to it when Ken Collier and, you know, that's skiffle is what happened.
Anyway, so this is what you do on your Friday night.
Well, I do it on other nights other than Friday nights. I'm a double bassist. Can't you tell by the way I hold myself?
I wasn't watching you hold yourself.
Here comes the box office top 10 this week with Mark being pithy and Kevin just interjecting when he feels moved by the spirit. At 10, Disaster Movie.
It's horrible and it's not even about disaster movies. It's just, yuck. You have to disagree.
That was the original title of Recount.
Oh, very good, man.
Okay, the standard's high. Pineapple Express at 9.
It's nothing like as funny as it ought to be. And I think this whole Judd Apatow stable thing has finally run its course. I think the sort of the Revenge of the Nerds revival is over. And I think Pineapple Express is the reason, you know, is proof of why.
And not nearly as good as Watermelon Tunnel.
I must have missed that one. I think there's a... I know a stall that might sell it on Tottenham Court Road. The Duchess is at 8.
You know, Keira Knightley's best performance, and I actually think the film's pretty good. It does have, you know, a certain degree of depth. It plays out that whole idea about it being a paradigm of the modern monarchy quite broadly, but I think that's perfectly fine. And I think she really is turning into a proper actress as opposed to the not proper actress that I thought she possibly was in the past.
You've seen that, Kimmy?
I haven't.
The Duchess?
I have nothing
to say.
Where
do you stand on Keira Knightley?
I'd stand on her anytime. Yeah.
What? The Boy in the Striped Pajamas is at number 7.
You know, probably we both saw this. Surprisingly, I actually thought it was... I went into it really expecting to not like it, but in the end, I was kind of won over. It's a brave attempt to tell an important story for, you know, for young kids. I mean, it is clearly a movie, you know, which your kids have to... I think it's, you know, 12 and upwards they have to be, but it's very, very difficult to do a Holocaust story for, you know, school children, and I think they've done it rather well.
You seen that, Kevin?
I haven't, but I have seen The Girl in My Pajamas.
Are there any films? You go to the cinema?
No, he's not. He's just... But this is great, you know.
Okay, a gag with every movie.
A gag with every movie.
The Woman at 6.
The Women.
At 6.
That was the short film.
It's a remake,
and the original was a million times better, and this is very terrible. And what on earth has happened to Meg Ryan? I mean, what has happened to Meg Ryan, really?
What has happened to Meg Ryan, Kevin?
Yeah, what has happened to Meg Ryan?
I don't know. You know, maybe it's just that she hasn't had enough injections of good roles lately.
Very good. Very good. You see what he did there? It was good.
Mama is a treat also for webcam viewers who are following that. It's all being streamed live, by the way, online. So we have Mamma Mia at 5.
Proof that a film really can be so bad, it's brilliant. And, you know, there's so few films in which that is true. But in the case of Mamma Mia, the moment when Pierce Brosnan starts to sing, it is like good becomes bad, light becomes dark, up becomes down.
Could he have done Bobby Darin, do you think, Pierce Brosnan?
Well, funnily enough, because when you came on the program, you talked about Bobby Darin, and I said, because the interesting thing about Bobby Darin is it's all to do with phrasing. Actually, in his case, it's not to do with notes. And you know, because you toured all the Bobby Darin sets, which was very, you know, a very good thing to do. In the case of Pierce Brosnan, it's not just that he can't sing, he can barely speak. I mean, it's really astonishing. It's like watching somebody learning to communicate on screen. But it's wonderful. It's so terrible.
Not pithy.
Mamma Mia, now and forever.
Death Race at 4.
Yeah, well, here's the pithy review of Death Race, right? It's the remake of Death Race 2000 by Paul W.S. Anderson. Right, this is the BBFC certificate for the original Death Race 2000. X. That's what Death Race 2000 X, right? This is the certificate for the new Death Race 15, and it says, and this is, the film contains scenes of death and injury during the racing. Great, fine. But the violence is shown with blood, but the scenes do not linger on the violence, and the action moves on. I don't want a version of Death Race in which it does not linger on the violence. That's the whole point of Roger Corman movies, is it lingers on the violence. I mean, it's the whole thing about what's Jaws if not a Roger Corman movie with a budget. Well, what's Death Race if not a Roger Corman movie with a budget but without the lingering violence? I don't want that, thank you very much. But Jason Statham's in it.
What's Chatteris if you're not there?
Yes.
What do you make of this?
I don't like films with lingering violence.
Do you not?
No.
Ever?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gratuitous, silly. That has, you know, movies with no plot or story or characters. That would.
Where'd you stand on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
I run it like a nightlight, like a loop. No, I'm kidding.
No. Okay, but seriously, do you think it's a good movie? Because I think it's a masterpiece.
Oh yeah, the original one is good.
Fine.
They just kept making them.
No. Yeah, everything else off. That's fine.
He didn't say it was a masterpiece.
He says it's a good movie. Yeah.
I can't use masterpiece in the way that he does every week.
No, yeah, absolutely.
that's the last time I'm ever nice about you.
Righteous Killer 3.
You know, Wrongeous Kill. John Avnet, you know, directing Traffic. I mean, in fact, we've got the movie that John Avnet made with Al Pacino before this coming out this week, which has been sitting on a shelf unloved. And, it, you know, why are De Niro and Pacino together in such a turgid, you know, clearly straight-to-video B-movie that's only in cinemas because it's got them in it.
These might be Kevin's friends, you have to be careful.
I don't care if they're his friends. I mean, have you seen the film?
Oh.
Of course he hasn't.
Oh. A lot of money, though.
Yeah, but it isn't. It isn't. It didn't take a lot of money. That's the
No, I meant they paid me.
Oh, I see. But if you're going to sell out, you know, that's at least do it for something like the Rugrats movie or something.
Taken's at two.
Yeah, which... Liam Neeson. Have you seen Taken? Mm. Right, you know the story, right?
Assume Kevin hasn't seen it.
Okay, here's the plot of Liam Neeson is an ex-special ops guy, and his daughter wants to go to Europe, and he says, don't go to Europe because it's full of bad people. But she goes to Europe, and when she's in Europe, she gets kidnapped by bad people who are going to obviously sell her into, you know, white slave trading. But there's an 88-hour delay. There always is. All terrorists observe 96 hours, uh-huh. You know, between kidnapping somebody. And actually doing the thing, exactly. So Liam has to go to Europe and kill everyone. And he does. He kills everyone.
Everyone in Europe.
Wow.
Everyone in Europe who's bad with a gun and looks Albanian. Let's be precise about it.
Well, because it's interesting because it is produced by Luc Besson, who is French, and yet the portrayal of the French is, as you rightly said, there is a scene in which somebody comes down the road on a bicycle with a baguette under their arm.
You know he's a policeman because he's got a baguette.
Listening to Sacha Distel and, you know, and having an affair on the side whilst, you know, it's...
Right, it's
welcome to Europe.
Anyway, Tropic. Does that appeal to you?
Which?
Taken.
Yeah, with Liam Neeson.
Look, I like Liam Neeson. Absolutely,
I like Liam Neeson.
I'm not sure I'll be rushing out.
Okay, and the UK's number one is Tropic Thunder,
which again is not as funny as it ought to be. And its big problem is it has too much money to play with. It's an interesting idea, and all the politically write-off stuff, the idea of Robert Downey doing blackface in the way that, for example, Spike Lee did with Bamboozled, and you know, those ideas are in, but they just get lost amidst the fact that it cost hundreds of millions of dollars,
Isn't Tom Cruise in this movie? Yeah.
But Tom Cruise is now... The funny thing is people say, oh, isn't it brave? Tom Cruise did a cameo in which he appears to be really slimy and horrible.
Why is that brave?
But he does it a lot. I mean, actually, it's never been a problem for Tom Cruise. You know, you saw Magnolia. Sure. There's so many films in which he does that thing. And everyone's saying, oh, well, it's really... What they mean is because he's wearing a fat suit and he appears to be bald.
DB in Soho says, could we add Kevin Spacey to our hello list? Do you think
Kevin wants to. I mean, he's already, you know, snubbed me once by saying that I say masterpiece all the time. it's going to sting.
I would have thought that a critic would have a tougher skin than that.
Who told you that? Why do you think?
If you can't take it, then how can you dish it out? That's
you don't
I
think
say.
I take it every day. If you ever have half an hour to spare, Google Mark Kermode an idiot, and you know, just see how long that'll last for.
Final few emails because Kevin has to go. Brian in Belfast. Hey boys, the hat's great. K-Pax was great. American Beauty, wow. Kevin is one of the greatest actors today. Bob Nolan, please convey to Kevin how pleased a lot of us are having him in London at the Old Vic. One of the best nights I've ever had in the theatre was Speed the Plough. Lucy on this, dear Wood, Walters and Kevin. Kevin, I love you. It fills me with a deep unbridled joy that you're living on our soil. And Mr. Spacey, that impersonation wasn't the greatest, but it's scaring my children. Please do it again. I don't know which one that is.
Two different people or is that won?
I've got no idea.
Well, the Al Pacino wasn't that great. No. But the Christopher Walken, obviously.
Thank you.
Do the Beer Hunter thing. And hey, come down to the Borderline today. You can come up on stage and play Bobby Darin with a skiffle backing. You really, you want to know how that sounds.
We have to draw a veil over this. So, unfortunately, so Recan is on More 4 tonight at 9 o'clock, and then it'll turn up on various other channels. And then, assuming we can't get tickets to see anything that you do at the theatre.
Oh, you can. Sure you can.
We can?
Yeah.
Okay, what's the next movie that we see you in?
Telstar will be the next, and then I'm off toward the end of the month to make a film with George Clooney and Ewan McGregor called The Men Who Stare at Goats, right, which is based on a book.
I guessed. Yeah. Because there is a book called The Men Who Stare at Goats.
It would be a little bit unfair if it was a completely different story with the same title.
Yeah, it would be.
Kevin, really appreciate you coming in.
Thanks very much indeed.
Kevin Spacey, so some movies to review in just a moment.
Across the UK,
this is Five Live.
Gary Delabate is a New York Online listener. Says, hello, Mickey and James. Saw Taken last week. What a film. Who knew... You don't know which way it's going.
No, you don't.
Who knew that watching Liam Neeson kneeing people in the face for 90 minutes could be so enjoyable? Just what I needed before heading off to New York for a very long, very dull business meeting. All the best and up the Wolves. Christy in Liverpool, dear you too. That's very clever. I just caught up on last week's podcast. I watched Taken and I thought at one point, who's driving the boat then? And
hey!
I heard the podcast and Mark said the same thing.
Good, thank you.
Peter Smith, who's our friend in Prague, you might remember, a few months ago, rather disappointingly, starts the email, dear Simon and Mark, a few months ago, I was at a friend's flat when I noticed his box set of the 1981 Granada TV adaptation of Brideshead Revisited.
Very good.
Remembering how idyllic the programme appeared through my then 12-year-old eyes, I decided to borrow the DVDs and, excuse the pun, revisit the experience as an adult. Having just completed nigh on 13 hours of 24-style chain viewing, I'm now convinced that not only was Brideshead great television, but probably the finest piece of TV drama this country has ever produced. Surely any film adaptation of Evelyn Waugh's classic will automatically be hamstrung by the inevitable comparisons. Has any film ever stood so deep in the shadow of its TV predecessor? There again, as Mark doesn't watch telly, maybe his enjoyment of the film hasn't been tainted.
Well, it's an interesting...
I'm teeing you up for.
I am. It's an interesting thing because I mean, I didn't watch the original Brideshead Revisited because it was early 80s, wasn't it? And I think by that point I was off to Manchester and not doing television anymore, and probably had a political objection to it anyway because basically it was about a bunch of toffs having a bit of a bad time. And I think I probably made the joke, "War, huh, what is he good for?" Several times. So
I'm glad we weren't working then.
Thank you.
That would have been really bad.
Yeah, you would have hated me then, as opposed to now when we get on so swimmingly well. Anyway, so now the remake of it, because the obvious thing to say is, everybody else apart from me apparently remembers and greatly reveres the TV program. The TV program obviously had a much broader canvas, so in order to do it for a film, everything's had to be slimmed down. So directed by Julian Jarrell, who did Becoming Jane and also Kinky Boots, I think, and the script by Andrew Davis. Everyone knows, being a Bleak House, Fanny Hill. So the story, if you don't know it, I can't imagine anybody doesn't, particularly anybody of our age.
Remind us of the story.
The story is the 1920s, and a lowly person. Well, he's not that lowly, but in the realms of the story, he's lowly, goes to Oxford and meets up with Sebastian, who's terribly posh, and obviously terribly posh and therefore terribly troubled. And Sebastian takes him back to Brideshead, his house where he lives with his mater and pater. No, just his mater and his sister. And then they all go to Venice. And it's terribly hard because they're all sort of, you know, tied up with each other. And, you know, one has lots of feelings that one doesn't entirely sit very easily with one's Catholicism. And, you know, one is an atheist and one is a Catholic, and one is up and one is down, and one is rich and one is poor, and one is money. And they all sit around in floppy clothes having a terribly hard time and drinking a lot of champers. Anyway, here's a clip.
Welcome to Brideshead, Mr. Ryder. I've been hearing all about you. I do hope you didn't let Sebastian call you away in too much of a rush.
I'm afraid I didn't quite have time to pack the right things.
Sebastian must lend you some clothes while you're here. Or perhaps Bridie's a better fit. Are you a Bridie or a Sebastian, Mr. Ryder?
He can't borrow Bridie's clothes. Bridie dresses like a bank clerk.
And what form do your pleasures take, Mr. Ryder?
Sorry, pleasures?
Your hobbies. What do you do to relax?
He drinks.
Drinking is not a hobby, Sebastian.
Charles is a painter, Mummy.
How charming. We must get you to paint something for us. Would you do that, Mr. Ryder?
I'd be delighted. I think Brideshead's the most beautiful house I've ever seen.
How kind you are.
It will be impossible now to go into a pub without, say, drinking is not a hobby, Sebastian. Now, in a way, that clip kind of illustrates everything that's good and bad about the movie. Let's start with the good stuff. Emma Thompson is blinding. I really like Emma Thompson most of the time, but in this she's really good. But she has to play this incredibly scary matriarchal figure who's the upholder of the Catholic religion and absolutely has dominated her children in a way which has caused them to have, shall we say, some personal issues. And although she's not on screen very much, when she is on screen, she just lights the whole place up. Funnily enough, Emma Thompson is to some extent becoming the new Judi Dench, the person who kind of comes in for 15 minutes like in Shakespeare in Love and is brilliant for the 15 minutes then goes away. The problem is that when she goes away, the rest of the movie has a real problem living up to the kind of the wattage of her presence. I mean, there's also Michael Gambon, who plays the father, who's around in Venice at the beginning and then comes back at the end to shuffle off the mortal coil. And Michael Gambon's a very, very fine performer. But as the two leads, we have now Ben Whishaw. I'm a really big Ben Whishaw fan. I think Ben Whishaw is a really good actor. I think he was the youngest person to do Hamlet for the Royal Shakespeare Company. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
I think you might be right.
Thanks.
Wasn't there? No, I think you're right.
No, it was him. Yeah. And he was on stage recently in Some Trace of Her. I mean, I do think he's an absolutely mesmerising actor. In that film, Perfume, the film was very, very flawed, but he was really good in it. Somehow, here, you heard a brief clip of him there when he was saying, but Mummy, he's a painter, and he likes to drink. Oddly enough, Ben Whishaw seems uncertain in this role. I think it's the first time I've seen him seem uncertain in a role. And it may be because it's very difficult now. I mean, I was thinking about this. Was it in the 1980s that somehow, because of, Thatcher and the Style Council and all the rest of it, we all had this kind of tolerance for that sort of heritage, posh, foppy, I'm having a terribly hard time, that has now gone because everything has changed? I mean, is it that watching Brideshead in the current economic climate, in the current political climate, is it a different experience? Or is it simply that the television series worked for people because over the space of the TV series, you were at the soap operatics of it? And it is soap opera. I mean, people can say what they want about it. They can say it is basically a soap opera structure that is able to work better than in the film. My big problem was I sat there with that classic Kermode response, which is, I don't care about you people. I just don't care. And it's interesting because I love films that have got religion involved in them. I love films that have got men and men. I love all that stuff, and yet I'm just sitting there thinking, why am I not interested
in this? Description of your perfect movie, is it a bit of religion, a bit of men and men?
Well, I mean, you think it ought to be, and then you watch this. I mean, honestly, what I want to do, I want to see a movie in which Richard Gere plays a conflicted priest. That's it. And maybe if there's some skydiving in it and Linda Blair turns up on roller skates, I'll be happy, right? And then ABBA songs all the way through the rest of it. But I'm sitting there watching this thinking, I really don't care. I don't care about your problems. I don't care about your issues. When Emma Thompson comes on screen, suddenly I care. In exactly the same way that when you think of the great Emma Thompson performances, there is something about her which is, you just trust her. You just think, I'm in proper hands here. I mean, whether it's, the scary Mary Poppins movie that she did recently, Inanimate Fee, which I think was, wasn't as widely praised by critics as it ought to have been. There's a reason why every school kid in the world now has a copy of Nanny McPhee on DVD and watches it, because it's great, because she's really good. She's up there with Julie Andrews in terms of the great, I mean, really great British, female performers. And believe me, saying, Julie Andrews, you know how much I love Julie Andrews and Mary Poppins, and I think it's a really big, the rest of the movie can't live up to her. And you do sit there thinking, why are you doing this now? Why are we getting Brideshead now? Somehow it seemed appropriate in the 1980s, clearly. I think that time has passed, and I think the film fails to make an argument for us watching this again right now, and I think that's a major failing.
Jack Blackburn says, "Dear he Evelyn and she Evelyn,"
mm-hmm. Very good.
"I'm starting at Oxford on Monday, so I feel that Brideshead Revisit is almost required viewing. Added to that, my brother was an extra on the film and supposedly has a cameo, so I must ignore whatever review the good doctor does give the film.
Foppy-haired guy in punt.
And go and see it even if he dislikes it. Despite this, my faith in the good doctor remains steady, although I am beginning to worry about the other doctor, who last week was heard to be doing an impression. Not only had Dr. Mayo let his rules about impersonation slip, but his Liam Neeson was clearly based on Dr. K's Robert Downey Jr. I'm surprised that
Very different. They're very different. Do your Liam Neeson? Yeah, fine. Robert Downey Jr. Completely different.
Anyway, he says, I'm surprised you let the staggering hypocrisy go unnoticed. Dear Kylie and Danny, says Nigel in Edinburgh.
I'm Danny.
This is already the funniest Friday afternoon since Jason Isaacs was on. Oh, hello to Jason, by the way.
Hello to Jason
and
Isaacs.
And David, who's giving Mr. Considine a good kicking this weekend. Members of Fairport Convention.
Oh, Fairport Convention are coming to the... to the Borderline tonight.
Excellent, are they? Where you're playing, where your band's playing?
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully we'll get them up on stage.
Kevin Branner, Stephen Fry, and the Love Unlimited Orchestra and Electric Light Orchestra.
When did the Love Unlimited Orchestra join the ranks?
I don't know. Did they not get in? I just don't know.
Well, that's about 40 musicians, isn't it?
Dear Kylie and Danny, try to arrange for Kevin Spacey to be on simultaneously with you and the Doctor all the time. And I thought the Al Pacino impression was great. Who the hell does Kermode think? Think he is criticising other people's impressions. He says, you're standing on Keira Knightley and holding himself.
Yeah, very good.
Which, if you're wondering where that came from, it sounds a little bit rude. That's a quote from Kevin Spacey.
Yes.
Pete says he's Googling Mark Kermode idiot, and he's got 2,570
exactly.
hits at the moment.
I had to exercise self-censorship as I ran up to that sentence, because idiot isn't usually the word I suggest that you Google.
One of the things I like about working with the good Doctor is he's great every week, and he wears the same thing every week, and his hair has never moved in the 15 years that we've been working together.
Yeah, the thing I really like working with Simon is that
Dish Meagle and Gollum says, John in Brentford, it's like watching a car crash. Every week I swear I'm not going to listen to the movie reviews due to the scathing remarks of the good Doctor, virtually cutting my cinema going to nil, but I can't help myself. However, I really want to see Simon Pegg's new movie, and if the comments are in any way unfairly derogatory, I may be forced to abandon my Friday afternoon listening forever. Be kind.
It's all my fault. Simon Pegg was on
this programme earlier.
Yeah, no, but he was also on the Jonathan Ross programme, in which Jonathan Ross said to him something about, oh yeah, and then there was Run Fat Boy Run, and everybody seemed to laugh, agreeing, you know, that everyone knew that film was a complete stinker, which is funny because I don't remember everyone saying that at the time, and I remember having a bit of a fight on my hands, but it was a complete stinker, and it's nice to see the history has proven us right. So anyway, How to Lose Friends and Alienate People, which is based on the memoir of Toby Young, the journalist, who is kind of self-styled obnoxious journalist. I'm not criticising Toby Young. That's how he styles himself. The story is that he was a journalist here, and then he went over to work in America, and he was, you know, with big flashy magazines, and he wanted to kind of break into celebrity culture, and he sort of thought he was on the outside of it, but he was on the outside of it, and he sort of wanted to get inside of it, but he couldn't really, and then everything went terribly badly wrong, and then he came back, and then he wrote a memoir called How to Lose Friends and Alienate People about just how badly his stint in America had gone. So now we have a movie which is a fictionalized version of that memoir, in which Simon Pegg plays Sidney Young, and the names of the magazines have been changed, and the names of all the sort of the corresponding things have been changed. So here is a clip from the movie in which Simon Pegg is playing Sidney Young as the British journalist who isn't Toby Young but sort of is Toby Young, who goes to America and starts doing interviews in a completely inappropriate manner.
Bill Nathanson, nice to meet you.
Sidney Young, Sharps Magazine. Huge fan, lovely to meet you. I've just seen the film Rap Rats.
Good. Did you like it?
I did like it. I liked the hamster thing that you played.
Actually, he's a chipmunk.
Yeah. Now, I've done a bit of research, and I can see that you're quite a private man. Is that right?
Well, I like to keep a line...
Because I think that's great. That's brilliant. But, you know, today, let's get behind the mask.
I don't think there really is a mask as such. I don't mean to be a pain, but what I really want to talk about today is the new musical.
Yeah.
Keep it about the work, you know. Is that all right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. First question. Are you Jewish?
I don't see what the relevance of that is.
Well, fine. Second question. The hamster thing that you play in the film.
It's a chipmunk.
Whatever. Is that gay?
It's a chipmunk.
I know, yeah, but is it a gay chipmunk?
Look, it's a kid's cartoon. It's just a chipmunk, okay? I don't think chipmunks can be gay.
Okay, all right. So it's straight. It's a straight chipmunk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, got that. So, are you gay?
And so it progresses. And now, look, here's the obvious problem. In the case of the book, which I'll say from the outset, I haven't read. Everyone who's read it says, actually, what's funny is that you know, there's this kind of scabrous insight into celebrity culture and wanting to be an insider but actually being an outsider. And I know people who respect that book very much. I haven't not read it out of principle. I just happen not to have read it. But it's clear that in the case of the film, what they've done is to attempt to soften it for a mainstream audience. There's a quote by Toby Young who said, the film is a romantic comedy, whereas in reality, it would have been more of a dark psychological thriller. And he's referring very specifically to the fact that there's a kind of central love story at the middle of the film, and that's not, did you know, didn't work out the way it really worked out. And he's being flippant to some extent, but in a way he's hit the nail squarely on the head. The problem with the film is that the source material is kind of dark and putrid, and that's what people liked about it. And the film itself is trying to be open to a mainstream audience. It's trying to make the character less obnoxious than he sort of publicizes himself as being, and make him likable, and despite everything else that's going on, make you kind of end up rooting for him. And you watch it and you think, this is rather like, you know, The Devil Wears Prada. It's a similar idea of taking something which has got an awful lot of teeth and softening it for a more mainstream. The difference is, The Devil Wears Prada, although I had problems with it, clearly worked for a very wide audience. And I don't think that How to Lose Friends and Alienate People, particularly in this version, has that wide kind of appeal. There's a number of problems. One of them is that very early on, there's a lot of animal gags, right? But very early on, there's a scene in which he tries to get into the BAFTAs by turning up with a pig, saying it's the star of Babe. And then later on, there's a whole thing when he's in the publishing company and somebody's chihuahua, he has to look after the chihuahua. You've probably seen the clip of this on television, and he throws a ball and the ball goes out the window and the chihuahua tries to go out the window. I'm always suspicious of any movie which features funny animal gags, because they do tend to be an indication of a lowest common denominator. Now, I know, because I can hear everyone screaming it, that some, at least part of those things, are actually based in fact. A journalist I was talking to the other day said, oh no, the thing with the pig, he really, that there is truth in that, that really did happen. It doesn't matter. What matters is whether on screen it looks like what you're doing is playing to the broadest possible, you know, bassist comedy base. And that was what was happening. So because you lose the scabrous edge, there isn't really anything insightful about the nasty nature of celebrity. What it's trying to do is be a broad comedy, which comes down to, in that case, does it make you laugh? Now, in the interest of fairness, I sat in the screening I was in. There was a person behind me who I thought was going to have a heart attack with laughter. They were literally laughing like, ha, 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 and it was really loud, full. Clearly, they got their minimum 12 laughs quotient out of the way about 15 minutes in. They enjoyed the rest of the film.
It was a pompous aristocrat, was it, who's behind you?
He'd been come off of Bride's Head Revisited when, yep, he was finished with that.
Floppy and head.
Said, Mama, I'm sorry, mater, I'm off to play the grand piano, and then I'm going to the to watch How to Lose Friends and Alienate People. And so he was clearly enjoying himself. I, however, sat there and I laughed twice. And for me, that's too low a laugh quotient to pass the film by. Now, I think Simon Pegg is a perfectly sort of charming screen presence, and I understand what it is that they've tried to do, but I think the honest truth of it is it doesn't work, because it doesn't satisfy on either ground. It's not scabrous and edgy enough to be a biting satirical thing in the manner of, say, for example, Thank You for Smoking, and it's not funny enough to be a bland, whimsical rom-com. I don't, you know, the rom isn't rom enough, and the com certainly isn't com enough. A disappointment, I'm sorry to say.
Nigel said, is there any way I can get to listen to the Kevin Spacey bits on today's programmes? The South Wales police helicopter was hovering over my house, and even with my DAB radio turned up as loud as possible, I could only hear about one word in five. Well, the iPlayer works for radio, so you can always go back and do that. It'll also be a podcast, as Chris Patton will be a podcast, the films will be a podcast, and Simon Pegg is going to be a podcast. So your world is full of podcast joys.
It is.
And I just want to mention Pete Richardson, who says, Dear Cheese and Onion, as formerly the world's only professional washboard player with the Butter Mountain Boys.
Yeah, I remember
the best postmodern Cajun band, according to The Guardian. I am very much looking forward to seeing Brideshead for the following reason. The fiddle player in the band was an extra playing a choir boy in the TV series, but sadly none of the band have a part in the film. If you ever need a washboard player, then I think the synergies are obvious.
I have to say, we do have a washboard player.
Devastating.
The world is full of washboard players.
45
seconds.
They're
all called Al, oddly enough. Very quickly. On the
Any other Al's
Al.
To mention?
Yeah, Al Pacino, 88 minutes. You know, Righteous Kill, Wrongeous Kill, directed by John Avnet. Before Robert De Niro and Al Pacino made made all that money, I can't do the Kevin Spacey, you know, Al Pacino impression. Al Pacino made this other movie with John Avnet, which is sat unloved on a shelf. Story is, Al Pacino is a sort of forensics guy. He got a serial killer sent down for death row. Now the serial killer is about to be executed, so all the crimes start happening again, and Kevin Spacey gets a phone call. You're going to die in 88 minutes if you don't do a bunch of running around and going,
that'll do.
Hoo-ha, 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 and it's rubbish.
I hope both your gigs go well tonight.
Yeah, because thank you.
What's your movie of the week?
I'll tell you what my movie of the week is. We haven't even got to
brief.
It. Heavy Load.
No,
you Heavy Load.
No,
sorry,
but the films you've mentioned. 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2. Never mind. Lost
just
interest.
Throw,
have a great weekend.
We'll
see you in
week.
Detroit, Michigan
bad
on
week.
Monday.
Downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.